Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Taos in Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. And as much as it's always a football week around here this time of year, and we've talked a lot of Ravens football, Luke Jones and I are going to be talking some baseball in this segment. If you want football, you can go find it at Baltimore Positive. Hopefully you're listening at AM 1570. We can only can't do two things at once, but we're going to try. And certainly this time of the year, we like to have problems where the Orioles and the Ravens intersect. And I go back to my old Colts fandom. As the 75 Colts come to town this week, and I think about Burt and Lydell and Hey Diddle Diddle and all of that stuff. There was a point where Brooks and Johnny intersected, and Ray Lewis and Cal Ripken intersected. I'd like to think that the Orioles won't be last place every September, but when they are, they can at least make it this interesting for the 30th anniversary of 21-31. Luke was at the ballpark on Saturday. I have chatted with Leonard Raskin, who was at the game on Saturday night. I've chatted at length with Alan McCallum, who made his way down to the ballpark on Saturday. It's sort of a rare appearance for him. He doesn't go. I thought he was a 13-game season ticket. He was a 29-game season ticket holder for the better part of 25 years. But a lot of folks made their way down. Luke, you and I have not said a word. We've talked for hours about football. I don't think we said it much, even in the aftermath of you almost witnessing a no-hitter and me, you know, going through all my crazy David Cohn and Bud Smith and Mike Messina and all the near no-hitters of history. But Saturday night in the aftermath, Alan reached to me. I reached to him because Davey Johnson had died on Saturday, and I think I knew Davey pretty well from just the 2 years he was here, and of course my cousin playing with him back in the 60s. Alan was you. Alan covered Davey Johnson in 96 and 97 almost every game. I mean, Alan was a really, really committed ballpark reporter during that period of his life, and so his time was really the primary part of his time. Johnny Oates, sure, Regan, Davey Johnson, and then Mike Hargrove and some things that came after that. But Davey was a legend. So I reached to Alan before the game on Saturday. I said, you got to come on and talk some Davey Johnson with me. He's like, when do you want me on? I'm like, I don't know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, whenever, after. And then the game breaks out Saturday night. He's like, I got to come on. We got to talk about this Sunday morning. I'm like, I don't like pregame football that much. Let's do it. I've had a lot of thoughts. I mean, one thought I had is I wish I were there. I think it was a top, I guess, three, if not five, Camden Yards night moment ever in 32, 33 years of having the stadium now, unless you're into the Pope or into Bruce Springsteen or Billy Joel. You know, I don't know. Delmon Young, 21-31, and then this thing, kind of, sort of, in some weird way.
Yeah, I mean, the celebration itself was very good. I mean, how could it not be when you consider some of the individuals who came back? I mean, Ken Griffey Jr. was there. For me, I mean, the one that really meant a lot to me as someone who grew up in the late 80s and the 90s, John Miller being back at the ballpark, and even John Miller being in an Orioles broadcast booth for an inning on Saturday night. I mean, I fired up MLB TV on my laptop and I listened to that because that's how much that meant to me to hear John Miller talking about the Orioles being part of a broadcast, albeit only for one inning. But I mean, the game itself, when you consider how frustrating, how much anger fans have had this year with what's happened on the field. We've talked a lot about the missteps off the field, the Birdland memberships, which will continue to be talked about, the new ownership group, all of that. We'll continue to talk about that, right? Because Saturday didn't fix anything in that regard. But
by the way, I have two words for you from my source, my deep throat, my orange deep throat. My two words are, ready? Michael Arrighetti. That's all right. I'm going to say.
All right.
Yeah.
But I think the word that comes to mind is, I think it was therapeutic in a lot of ways. It was fun. I mean, it was a fun, unbelievable moment. And unbelievable, you know, with the ceremony itself, I thought the mid-game recreation of Bobby Bonilla and Rafael Palmeiro pushing Cal out of the dugout. He goes over and hugs the B, you know, who was their first base coach that year, Al Bunbury. And to, you know, feign that he's going to jog around, and everyone knew he wasn't going to, of course, but that was fun. But it's funny, in the aftermath of this Ravens collapse that you and I have spent so much time talking about, and we'll continue to. I mean, even as we're talking about the Cleveland, even as we're getting deeper into the season, we will reference this because how can you not when that takes place? But so much talk about win probability. The Dodgers had a 99.6% win probability with two outs in the ninth inning. I mean, you and I've talked about, and you alluded to it. I've never seen a no-hitter in person. That's one thing that, and I'm at a point now where, considering all the games I went to growing up and as a teenager and as a young adult, and now having done this for a living as my livelihood and covering, I don't know, in any given year, 55 to 70 games a year, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood probably. Never seen a no-hitter in person. Yamamoto was fantastic. I mean, I don't know how many people watched the game itself if you weren't there. Maybe you tuned in late. He was so good. There were only a couple instances of hard contact where the Orioles had a shot to get a hit. So I'm thinking in those terms. And then Jackson Holliday does what he does. And you're thinking, okay, missed out on that. At least the Orioles saved themselves from the embarrassment of being no hit. And then 10
Cal
minutes
still broke the
later.
record.
Yeah, right. It was
Hey,
still a
still
fun
got
night.
to chant Eddie,
Right.
Eddie, right?
All of that, but then that win, and you know what? And again, we'll stick more to just the fun and the pomp and circumstance. But you know what game it reminded me of that I'm hoping, for the sake of this current iteration of the Orioles and what 2026 and beyond is going to be. You know what game came to mind for me? The Robert Andino game against the Red Sox in 2011, where it knocked them out. The Orioles were not good that year, but they finished the season with something to feel really good
I
about, and I get it.
attended that game. That was a fun night.
That, I mean, you talk to Adam Jones, you talk to Nick Markakis, you talk to that, the Buck era Orioles, they all point to that and say something happened that night. You know, that was different. And I think it sounds kind of silly saying that because, I mean, okay, this team won 101 games 2 years ago. They were in the playoffs last year, right? It's not as though they haven't tasted any of that. But Nestor, we've talked about it a little bit, but you go back and look at the 2023 Division Series roster, and I'm just going to read it off to you really quick. You know, we got 2 minutes to do this.
You're talking about the
Ryan,
Arlington series?
yeah.
Okay.
You realize how many of those guys are gone? Like that, okay, I get it. Gunnar and Rutschman and Westberg, I get it. But a lot of those guys are gone. So Brian Baker, gone. Kyle Bradish, back, but has been gone the last calendar year, right? Yennier Cano, a shell of what he was 2 years ago. Maybe he can get back to that, maybe not. Jack Flaherty, gone. Kyle Gibson, gone. Dean Kramer, still here. Grayson Rodriguez, technically still here, but doesn't feel like it because he's barely pitched in the last 14 months, or hasn't pitched in the last 14 months. Jacob Webb, gone. Tyler Wells had been gone. He's back, right? I mean, same thing for him. Hopefully he can stay on the field. Coulomb, gone. DL Hall, gone. C.N.L. Perez, you know, off the 40-man roster. James McCann, gone. Adley Rutschman, still here. Adam Frazier, gone. Gunnar Henderson, still here. Jorge Mateo, still here. Mountcastle, still here for now. You know, Mateo and Mountcastle, very decent chance they're both gone after this year. O'Hearn, gone. Arias, gone. Westberg, still here. Hayes, gone. Hicks, gone. Kerstad, who knows, right? I mean, we've talked about that in passing. Such a mystery. Mullins gone. Santander gone. It's a lot of gones there. So this is a different team than it was a couple years ago. And you just hope that experience, which was just fun. Again, just as a one-off, I joked and, you know, I put the little post up on social media saying this is exhibit number 3,473,247,346 of why baseball is the best. Because it's just one of those sports where there's a lot of stuff that happens that's not necessarily memorable, and you forget about it, and it's a long season, and they play every night, and you can't even t couldn't even tell anyone what happened last Tuesday, let alone what happened 2 months ago. But people will remember that game. I mean, that was absolutely wild. So I hope, for the sake of this young team that has a lot of work to do, and there's certainly a ton of work to do for Mike Elias to do with this roster and with this coaching staff, you're hoping they can take something away from that experience. And the fact that they did that in front of a big crowd, and you hope for the crowd's sake, because of what we've talked about, you know, that was something the Orioles gave people a reason to want to come back the next time, right? Which the Adam Jones Orioles Hall of Fame game back in August, with a bobblehead night. That, if you remember, that was a pretty listless, dead performance that they turned out, turned in with a good crowd on hand.
Even
So,
the Palmer night, they gave five
same
runs in the
thing.
first inning.
So, that was good to see. I think it was very therapeutic. You're hoping that it has something that this young group can take away, because you can taste some success, and you did that against the mighty Dodgers, right?
Well,
But
they've honored Palmer, they've honored Cal, they've honored Adam Jones. They're out of honorings. They've honored their owner with a bobblehead already, who hasn't shown up. So that's why I keep saying Michael Arougheti, because I'm hearing he's sort of like running things. It's sort of important as he looked in his blue, resplendent in his Dodgers blue in the dugout in the middle of an Oriole game of 21-31, admiring Cal Ripken from ownership standpoints and like that. I mean, we're an authentic community. Be an authentic guy. Come in, do something more than put yourself on a bar and take pictures with people. But like everybody showed up, the owner showed up, they're down in the dugout, they're doing the Cal thing, like they've been here a million years. It was a night where people came out, and Luke, I was going to speak to this a little bit because I had Howard Sherrill, my buddy that owns Duck Doctors, who was my first ballpark reporter, along with Tom Kapp, 32, 33 years before Allen came. They were my ballpark reporters. And he's a Birdland membership guy. And I have other friends who've admitted to me that they have Birdland money left. I thought like Saturday night would be the night you'd just go piss it away. Saturday night would be the night you go down, whatever your Birdland insider club ticket thing is, money you're going to lose. You've given them $1,000. Go do it on, spend something if you didn't use it. I thought Saturday night would have felt a little worthwhile to me. Jen and I talked about going down. The thing that kept me from going, a couple things. I didn't have a press credential, so like I wasn't going to go down there if I couldn't talk to Messina and John Miller and Eddie Murray and the people that I should have access to invite onto my radio program. People who would look me in the eye and know my name and say, "How you been?" All of those. Even Palmeiro was always, even after he chased me with the bat, he and I made fun, fine. I mean, he came back and played here. He even said to me, "I'll come on your show, help your ratings, man." And Palmeiro looked great. I mean, Palmeiro looked healthy, and yeah, Brady was there being Brady. So I was thinking about going. The weather and just the general fact that like Sunday was going to be a football day. And I told Leonard this, I didn't want to be Nasty Nestor Saturday night. I did not feel like being at the ballpark and I didn't feel like being out. I just didn't feel like being social. Cause I knew I had a lot of this to do in the aftermath of the game or the football game, not the baseball game. I didn't realize you'd be talking baseball today. Right. If I did, I would have gone to the game Saturday night. But I didn't go because of the weather. I just thought like, ceremony and it's going to be hokey and it's going to be rainy. And Ohtani pitched last night, and my wife sort of had a request that if we didn't go Friday night, and like, so I'm like, yeah, I'll sit it out. And I'm like, you know what? The television broadcast, all of whoever they bring in, they're all going to like sit in on it. So, like, to me, and seeing the television broadcast where I would get close-ups on all the this and that and whatever, and I don't know, I just felt like I wanted to watch it on TV, and I did. But I don't know, dude. I should have gone Saturday night, even though it should have been one of those things where like I didn't feel like being there, but I should have gone anyway. And wouldn't have been my first night at Camden Yards. I didn't feel like being there where I was actually there. But I don't know. I regret it. Can I say that out loud? That I have never said that to you, that I regret not going to an Oriole game. I regret the way they treat me like garbage and threw me out of a couple. You already mentioned Arlington. I don't regret going down there. I regret how I was treated. So people ask me why I don't go. I don't go because I'm not welcome. Guys with my skin color and my tone and my journalism card and my radio station and my background and my report, I'm not invited. So I don't go because I don't feel welcome. So that's for my audience. That's not for you, and that's just the truth. Truth is, I don't go when it really comes down to it. I'm like, they don't want me there. They don't want my money. They, like, nah, I just watch it on TV. I have to figure out how expensive it's going to be in TV in the future. But, for people go down there and have their Birdland money, this to me, it was a great draw, and it was a night people would go. And it wasn't full, and there were a lot of Dodgers fans down there, but I felt like the people that were there are the right people. They're the people that were there 30 years ago. And I flippantly kind of said to my wife, I'm like, You do know I went to the real one, right? Like, so like that's kind of good enough for me. And I spent part of my afternoon. This is when my wife came after me. She saw me rummaging through my rummagings. I mean, my boxes of press credentials that I would show to Sashi Brown or Chad Steele if they deny my media credential. But I mean, I have hundreds of pounds of boxes of credentials, and I have them in bags. And the Ripken 2131 came with a it was a special paper pass with a neck thing, but with a clubhouse badge, like the one that they tried to deny you in Arlington a year and a half ago. They gave those plastic badges out back in the 90s, literally. It was a clubhouse badge, and I had tickets. I had two tickets for the game, but all of it was under glass at the radio station for 25 years. Like, it went under glass in 1995 and stayed under glass until 5 years ago when the glass broke and my wife took all of it apart and was all kind of glued together a little bit, and I couldn't find it. And I'm looking everywhere for my 2131 badge, and people were sharing all their memories of that night. And I was looking for it. And she's like, "This is important to you. We really should go to the ballpark." I'm like, "Ah, get off my lawn. It's going to rain. I'm not giving those bastards money. F them. F Michael Arrighetti. He was an arrogant prick to me." So these are the things I'm saying at 5 o'clock on Saturday. And, when it all happened and she's in here and I'm in here and we're watching a game on TV and it's all happened, and I'm like, "Well, this seems like fun. And I don't have enough fun in my life, and certainly not enough fun with this baseball team that it would have been fun to be there on Saturday night." And that was even after the no-hitter, and I was busting your chops about the no-hitter at 8 2/3. Where are you on that? Like, would it have changed your life today to be talking about having attended a no-hitter on Saturday night?
I mean, change my life. I mean, I'm at a point in my life where, don't get me wrong, I love baseball, but it's not my life. So would it have changed my life? No, but it's still on my list of things that I'd want to see at some point. I mean, I'd much prefer to be covering an Oriole throwing a no-hitter. I mean, John Means did it in Seattle 4 years ago, which, as you know, was first time there's been a solo one since Palmer, back in 69. So,
What's just a hard thing? Like, I text Mark
well, it's
Messina
funny.
Sunday morning and said, "Did you ever attend a no-hitter?" He's like, "No, but my brother." I'm like, "Yeah, I know about your brother, but like, did you?"
Multiple times.
And then I thought, "Did your brother ever attend a no-hitter? Was your brother ever on?" And I'm thinking, the Yankees never got no hit. And I'm thinking, was he a part of the Williamson Olsen, that thing that happened in
Was he on the
91?
roster yet?
He might have been. I don't know. I asked him. I don't know the answer to that. But like, I'm thinking, here's a Hall of Famer that played in New York and Baltimore, played 20 years in the game, almost threw several, took a couple in 7-8 for sure. And the Alomar one, and then the one that I witnessed, which was literally the Bud Smith weekend. I talked to you about Bud Smith and walking out of that no-hitter. The night before, I was interviewing Tony Gwynn, and we stopped the interview. We stopped the tape to watch Messina deal at Fenway Park. He was throwing the no-hitter on Sunday Night Baseball on the night before Labor Day in 2001, September 3rd. It was a week before September 11th. It was a week before that. So like that time in my life, but I'm thinking to myself, like, my kid saw the no-mo no-hitter. So Messina was gone by then, I think. So I'm just thinking how hard it is to even be in a major league uniform, 162 games. Like, Cal Ripken probably participated in one in his career, maybe two. I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking out loud. It's really, really hard to see a no-hitter. And it's random. And I've sat through a couple of 7 and 8 innings, and I've, but like, you had 8 2/3, and he was dealing. Like, I thought tonight was the, oh, you would be able to have your night that I want you to have, and you didn't have it.
Yeah, a couple things while you were talking. Messina made his debut about a month after that combined no-hitter in Oakland, where it,
So
what it
he
was
missed
Mal.
that one.
Yeah, he missed that. David Cone threw a perfect game 2 years before Messina arrived in New York.
That's the one I was supposed to go to and I didn't go
Yeah.
to. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, so you
That was
mentioned
against
Cal.
Montreal, I believe. Yeah, the
You
Expos.
mentioned Cal, obviously the combined no-hitter, but remember what? Juan Nieves for
I was at that
Milwaukee
game, so I
did
walked in on the Cal was definitely there that night.
it. Well, I mean, that was during the streak, so he had to
Yeah.
be. Wilson Alvarez
Of
at the
course.
last year at Memorial Stadium and Nomo. That was Cal's last, the what, night two or night three of his last season, 2001. So, but yeah, I mean, it's funny because, again, just speaking personally, it's not like I was going to run over to the Dodgers clubhouse, necessarily, or write about Yamamoto. But as a baseball fan, yeah, there's a sense of when it's 3-0, it's just like, well, it would be really cool to see this.
I would
It's
have
not.
told you to run to the Dodgers clubhouse. I would have made it mandatory
And maybe I
as
would
your
have.
friend, because I was at Nieves' locker that
Yeah.
night. By I
Well,
drove out there in the sixth inning. I
and I
when it
would.
was a no-hitter, I drove to Memorial Stadium that night. I was in the locker room when Nieves threw the no-hitter, but I didn't. I wasn't there at the national anthem.
Yeah.
It was cold as hell too. It was April. It was
Right,
cold.
right.
But I was. I mean, I have all of these touches with no hitters, which is what makes it such a special thing for me. That the cone no hitter I was supposed to go to. Bruce Springsteen played Brendan Byrne that night. Scotty P and I. We were going, and we didn't go. And he threw a no hitter. And the Messina no hitter, the near no hitter here. I did my show at Hooters. I was supposed to go with it on a date, and we detoured to go on a date. We went to a restaurant. Instead. So I've had all of these no hitter. The kid, the left-hander that was throwing a no hitter in the eighth inning against the Minnesota Twins in 1987. I don't left-handed pitcher. My God, I'll have to go look at his name. He's off your radar. But there was a no hitter being thrown at the Metrodome,
Yeah, I
seven and
don't.
two thirds like that, seven and a third, like a nice chunky one. Back in my childhood, 18, 19 years old, and it stopped my night, and I. Stopped the date and I moved around and got in front of a television. So no hitters are have defined my life. You know what I mean? Literally, as a baseball fan.
Yeah, and it's funny because what there it was a couple years back where was it the Twins or someone came really close to having a combined one against the Orioles at Camden Yards. And I remember texting with you at that time and I said, look, man, a combined no-hitter, that doesn't do it for me. Like, don't get me wrong, that's a good team accomplishment, but there's nothing special, truly special about that. But when Yamamoto went out to the ninth, went out for the ninth, and he was at what, 104 pitches, I think he was. I'm just like, here we go. I'm gonna get a shot to see this. I mean, everyone that's in this ballpark is gonna get a shot to see this. And
Eric Bell,
okay.
May 6, 1987. I was on a date at the Rusty Scupper. He carried a no-hitter into the ninth inning, broken up on a bloop single. Steve Lombardozzi. There you go. So, see, I mean, 39 years ago, I can't
It's
remember
good.
what I ate the peach cake ate 39 minutes ago.
Yeah, but so I had those thoughts. Then Holiday hits the home run, and I say, all right, well, the Orioles spared themselves the embarrassment of being no hit on 21-31 night. But at that point, the game had gone long, and I'm just thinking, gosh, I just want to go home now. I want to be home. I want to watch the end of the college late night college football games and go
I
to
don't
bed.
need to
Because,
see Yamamoto drink sake
yeah,
tonight.
right.
You know, I got a
Yeah, I mean,
football game tomorrow in Buffalo.
I mean, if I from the moment that ball cleared the right center, hit the ground crew shed, if I could have just snapped my fingers and been in my car and heading up the JFX to head home, I would have done it at that point, right? But then the Orioles string together these at bats, and it's just like, there's no way,
How many
right?
people walked out when the ball hit the right field wall? A lot.
I mean, it wasn't a mass exodus, but certainly you noticed. But at that point, it's 3-2 or 3-1, and you're saying, okay, well, I'm not going to beat traffic at this point, so I might as well just hang in there. And to your point, there were quite a few Dodgers fans there. The Orioles announced it as a sellout. There are definitely empty seats, but
They
that's
just
nothing
continue
new.
to lie. That's
Nothing
okay.
new,
That's just a
right?
lie.
No,
It's all.
I'm
It's all.
no, I hear you. I'm agreeing with you,
It's just a lie.
but it was just then it turned into something that was wow. Again, this team's in last. They're. We all understand where they are right now. This isn't meaningful as far as wins and losses for this season, but that's why to me the Robert Andino thing just jogged my memory. Just seeing the euphoria, seeing what the clubhouse was like afterwards, the fact that you had 41,000 people there or whatever it was, and they were sent home happy with pleasant experience beyond just the cow ceremony. It's funny, you mentioned how you were feeling as far as why you decided not to go. I'll be totally honest with you, man. I was always going to go. Although it was funny when I saw that Kershaw was pitching on Sunday, I kind of almost forced myself to go, but I thought, no, nah, it's better from a content standpoint for me to watch all the NFL games. I know what happened week one, all that. But that was Clayton Kershaw's first time pitching at Camden Yards. And he's been one of my,
See,
he's
I
not
wanted to
prime.
see Ohtani pitch Friday
Oh,
night.
well, I've seen Ohtani. I've seen him do that at least.
I haven't seen Ohtani play. So, yeah.
But I was, I felt a certain way about the Cal thing, and I hate feeling this way, and it comes across as jaded sports guy, as jaded sports media guy, and it's not, but it's, you get to a point, and again, I say this from personal experience, right? I've cited it many times. I was 2 weeks old when the Orioles last won the World Series. I'm going to turn 42 in less than a month. I mean, that's how long it's been for this franchise. And when you're talking about my generation, and I was even talking to someone in the press box, someone in their mid-20s, and he made a comment. I'm not going to use his name, and didn't say anything controversial or flippant or disrespectful, but he kind of made the comment that while he respects Cal Ripken, it doesn't resonate with him. I mean, he's 25. He wasn't even born yet when 21-31 occurred, let alone any memory of what the Orioles were in. Through the mid 80s.
You tell these little snots with press passes while I don't have one that I'll come and educate them if they need that.
But it's not about that, right? I mean, for me, and agree, noted, and that's not to, I wasn't talking
Somebody's
about
got to
his
play the
knowledge,
Henneman Stedman role. It's me
but
now.
I wasn't talking about his knowledge. I'm just talking, he was just talking about his mojo growing up as a baseball
As to
fan
what
and
whether
all
why
that.
it's important to him,
Yeah,
right?
and it's just not like it. It's important to him because it's important to his father
In
or
the
his
way that Lenny
grandfather
Moore
or
was
his mom.
important to him, is important to me because of my
Correct.
dad, right?
Correct. Same with me. Like, look, I had the privilege of meeting Brooks a couple times over the years. I even sh once thanked him because of how much he meant to my dad. I mean, it's the first time I really met Brooks Robinson. It was kind of a fanboy thing to do that I probably wouldn't do 15 years later as a media guy, but I was, 27, and I just thought, hey, I don't know if I'll get a chance to do. And, I remember Brooks pat me on the arm, and, in the way that Brooks was everyone's next door neighbor or their favorite grandpa, right? I mean, that's why
Can't think
Brooks
of Brooks and not smile,
is the
man.
best, right? He was the best, right? But I never saw Brooks play. I mean, my mom was a couple months away from giving birth to me. And was up at Cooperstown for his induction, but Brooks wasn't my guy. He was my dad's guy. He was my grandfather's guy. He was, my aunt and my grandmom and my mom. Like, he was their guy. So I
They
loved
named their
him.
children after him,
Yeah,
man.
I loved him for that. But anyway, I'm getting off track a little bit. But you think about everyone that's younger than me. So anyone who's, say, 35 and younger, Cal is what that is. Cal is that to them what Brooks and Johnny Unitas was to me. And you think about that in those terms, that's why.
Or what the Colts even mean to the city at this point.
And don't get
Nothing.
me wrong. And don't get me wrong. The Orioles should absolutely honor their past. This is not me saying that. That would be the worst thing, would be to stop doing that. However, when you look at the lack of truly, not lack, but shortage of truly meaningful teams, truly meaningful experiences, truly meaningful players. There have been some, but not nearly enough over the last 40 years. And say more specifically, the last 30 years since 21-31. Part of me was just like, this is another example of like going out to an Orioles game and they're selling you on something that happened a really long time ago. And, you see what the team is now. And, we're going to see what happens. We'll see if they can have the kind of offseason they need to have and all that. But, there was part of me that was a little bit jaded, going into
I
that,
thought it was
but
hokey. I mean, like when it started on TV, I'm like,
yeah.
this is a, it was hokey for Cal. I mean,
But
the
you know
first time
what?
around was kind of sort of hokey, but it was not, it just happened. It wasn't staged in any way.
Yeah.
This thing felt a little more staged, but
A
to
little bit.
me, it
And
was
it's
the
hard to not.
old-timer. It was the old-timers part for me. The fact that Surhoff showed up when I know it hasn't been the easiest feelings with him in the
Sure.
franchise. And the fact that Bill Ripken was missing, and we're now 30 minutes into this, and people brought it up everywhere but me. And the fact that Cal's married to somebody different now, his daughter wasn't there, his brother wasn't there. He got emotional. Cal got emotional. Eddie was a supporting role. The John Miller thing, dude, I'm
That
watching
was
on
great.
TV, and
That meant
when.
that was my favorite part of the night, and I was listening to it the best I could just on my earbuds in the press conf or in the press box because I say this with no disrespect to Chuck Thompson, but Chuck Thompson wasn't mine. That he wasn't my era. Chuck Thompson at that point was, the guy who did Sunday games when John Miller was doing Sunday Night Baseball with Joe Morgan, right? I mean, and I don't get me wrong, I love that I got to listen to Chuck Thompson and experience that, but John Miller was my generation's Chuck Thompson. And considering how unceremonious that departure was and how ugly that was, I mean, I said for years that was absolutely close to the top of the list as far as the things that bothered me about where this franchise started going after, from 1997 on.
John Miller sat in my studio and sobbed.
I'm sure I've told you this. I can recall this was probably 91, 92, somewhere around there. So this was a few years before John Miller's departure. My family and I, we were at the Hunt Valley Mall. We were at one of the toy stores at the Hunt Valley Mall, and John Miller was there, one of his kids. And my dad struck up a conversation, and I don't remember his son. I don't even know if it was his son or his daughter or whatever. Like, we were kids. Like, I was 7 years old, something like that, just in a toy store. And I remember we kind of went off and were looking at toys and all that. My dad had a conversation with John Miller. It had to have been 15 minutes that they talked, just, I assume, talked Orioles. Like, I was more infatuated by being in a toy store and looking around. But I just think about that. And I always thought about that when, from the time that Peter Angelos made his comments about John Miller doesn't bleed orange and black and all that. And I thought about that, like, John Miller was there with his kid at a mall, and he struck up a conversation with a random Orioles fan for 15 minutes talking baseball, and
And did
they
that
got
every day of his life.
rid of that guy. So that meant so much to me. It was great seeing Eddie. I thought it was Ken Griffey Jr. got quite the pop as well. I mean, it's Ken Griffey Jr. Again, this goes back to my generation. Like, okay, he wasn't an Oriole, but he hit the warehouse at the 93 All-Star game, and he was the epitome of cool for a kid, a 19, a 10-year-old baseball fan in 1993. It didn't get cooler
You
than
know, he
Ken
was the
Griffey
epitome of
Jr.
cool for the 25-year-old contemporary who sat with him that morning that he hit the warehouse on that Monday morning. He flew
There
in.
you go.
He sat down with me in the Orioles clubhouse right by the front door. He put his bag down. He just got off an overnight. I told Leonard Raskin this story on the air this week. I said he sat there for 20 minutes talking to me, and he said, "Hey, dude, stay here and talk to me so nobody else bothers me." So nobody bothers me, because he was unpacking his bag, and I knew him a little bit, just a little bit, but he was such a great guy. I mean, Ken Griffey was just a great, he's part of the good part of the game that I love, the Tony Gwynn, those relationships that I talk about with those players of that era. And seeing that John Miller took the mic and he got people to chant Eddie, because it was a little selfish in his own way. His story
Perfect.
was meandering, and I'm like, "Is John okay?" It was like, but he was just trying to get some Eddie Murray chants going.
Great.
And I thought, he knows how close Cal
That's
and Eddie were. He
perfect.
was there for
That's
all of it.
perfect. And I would also say my favorite part, and Cal had perfectly fine words to say. My favorite part of Cal's speech was acknowledging it was also the 29th anniversary of Eddie hitting his 500th. And look, we just, you and I just talked about Brooks for 30 seconds and we both smiled, right? Everyone smiles talking about Brooks. And Cal, it's miraculous that Cal or anyone even came in the same stratosphere as far as what Brooks meant to this franchise, this city. But Cal's always been more careful. We all understand that, right? And I don't say that to be critical. It's just truth, right? I mean, Cal's just was always a little more careful and guarded. But I say that as an 11-year-old kid who got his autograph in late July of 1995 after a White Sox game and waited an
I was
hour and
going
a
to
half
say
after
the
a
most
game.
incredible thing
It was
Cal Ripken
incredible. I
ever
was part of
did
that.
was
I was part of
signing
that.
autographs for
I was part of
everybody.
that.
And I
So,
witnessed it every night.
I mean, Cal's my all-time favorite, but my favorite part of his speech was acknowledging Eddie. And my favorite part about Cal Ripken all these years later and Eddie, both Hall of Famers, right? I mean, we all know their credentials. Their friendship is still one of my absolute favorite things. When Cal flat out reflected on the streak and he said, "I was basically just following the advice of my dad, the instructions of my dad and Eddie Murray's example." I mean, that tugs at you a little bit when you think about those days. And I just, it's crazy. I mean, we've all seen the commercial on TV, Cal talking about Medicare and being 65 now, and Junior's a
And thinking of the
senior.
picture of them and at the vet holding that bottle of
Yeah.
champagne.
That was a long time ago, but like just to still have that experience Saturday night, even if some of it was hokey, it's great. And that's where, but it also goes back to my point about man, I want this franchise to make new memories because I want to have things to talk about with, my nieces, or, if I have kids one day still, or whatever, or just younger people. I mean, you want to have special things to talk about. And yeah, you can pass on the stories of your parents or your grandparents. And I've certainly done that when I've had people that cared to listen about that era. I mean, as someone who didn't live it, I'm pretty knowledgeable about it, just because I was a nerdy, sports fan growing up and heard those stories from, from my elders. But I also, when you're talking about this franchise, whether we're talking about the Ravens or the Orioles, but especially the Orioles, because the Ravens have at least been to the top of the mountain a couple times and have been a model franchise in terms of wins and losses and success on the field. Man, you want some new stuff to be able to talk about. And no, you're never going to have another Brooks Robinson. And no, you're never going to have another Cal Ripken. And at this point, Nestor, I even question whether you're going to have another Adam Jones. I mean, and that's not just a commentary on the Orioles, but it's very much a commentary on what professional sports continues to become, right? It's much more of a, your guys are distanced from the community in a way that they weren't even 15 or 20 years ago, let alone 40.
Well, they're distanced
But
from accountability. They're distanced from
that.
media. They're distanced from fans. They're distanced from their own city.
Oh, and in fairness to these guys, they also deal with a lot of scary stuff on social media that they hear from so-called fans, right?
Not
So
to mention the gambling part.
right. So I'm not even trying to, I'm not trying to completely you know what on that either. It's just the reality of where we are in 2025. But man, I want this franchise to have something 30 years from now that's a 30th anniversary, that's something that's really special, right? I mean, we're getting to the point now where you and I talked about this 10 years ago when they were in the midst of it. You're seeing a lot of fans that are younger. They have so much reverence for the Buck Showalter era. And look, they didn't even have a pennant. But when you consider what most of the last 40 years have been, 2012 through 16 was really fun, right? I mean,
Well, we're
it's a
honoring the
new.
75 Colts this week, and that doesn't
Yeah,
mean anything to you, but
sure.
anybody that was around in 75 with the Colts, especially my, I didn't have Johnny U. I came in on
And
that. We
you
lost
don't
our
remember
football team.
1958. You
Like
weren't alive for 58. Yeah.
70, Burt Jones. I mean, ask Clark Judge about Burt Jones. I have him on the air this week. I mean, Burt Jones was just this incredibly swashbuckling figure in the history of Baltimore sports that is long since forgot. It was 50 years ago.
Yeah. Well,
Years
and I
ago.
mean Bert and Burt Jones, obviously had the injury and, didn't get to have a long career. And
Well,
obviously
Burt was
Baltimore.
everything Lamar was for a little bit of time, as far as being like a guy you believed you could win with and a guy that was young and talented and all that. At that point in the game, you believed Burt could win. I got to ask you this because we are tying 70s together. Luke Jones is here at Baltimore Luke. You can follow him. You can be on our text service brought to you by Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy. You'll get it all first. Just a little bit of a break from football and purple therapy and losing to the Bills and Joe Flacco and all of that on the baseball thing. All of this started with Davey Johnson. And I guess you and I'd be doing a piece if 21-31 just happened and the game was a normal 7-1 Dodgers victory and everybody went home and we talk maybe Cal and Eddie and tell a story or two. But the Davey Johnson thing that started at the beginning of the day, and I think about people touching Oriole baseball and realizing I'm like, I have that picture on the wall of Louie and Davey Johnson and Brooks and Boog. 66, 67. And then that picture also exists with Belanger later on, more famously, kind of easier to find the one with Belanger than it is to find the one with Aparicio in 69, 70, 71. And that era of Oriole baseball, Davey was like, he wasn't Frank, he wasn't Brooks, he wasn't Boog, he wasn't Louie, he wasn't Palmer, wasn't McNally, I mean, even not Paul Blair. I mean, guys that were stars or perceived as such during that. He was in that trade for Earl the Big Cat Williams. And I should tell you this, because it's weird, but on Saturday morning, my wife saw me rooting through all my 21-31 stuff. We started talking about Cal Ripken. I started looking at the weather and I'm like, the weather. I'm not going to, I don't go to ballparks in the rain. You know this. It's like this dumb. I don't do it. I just don't like being stuck there when it's raining. There's nothing going on. Reminds me of the bad parts of my childhood. But the antique shop on Harford Road across from the barn, Bowery Antiques, was going out of business. It was their last day. like antiques. I've never walked in that store in my life. It had a huge sports portal, like of all sorts of cards, this, that, skipjack programs from 1984, like just crazy stuff in there. And I saw baseball cards, and I touched Earl the Big Cat Williams card. And Davey had been dead 5 hours. I had said to my wife, Davey Johnson, she's like, Dave Johnson, the pitcher. I'm like, no, Davey John. She's like, who's he? Because she's from Boston and she wasn't
Yeah.
around here. And she didn't see him play and get dealt for Earl the Big Cat Williams in 1973 the way I did. So I started telling her about Davey. And I told a few of these stories to Alan, but Alan was a part of it. Alan was my ballpark reporter when Phil Regan was here and Davey didn't get the job the first time. And the Peter Principles chapter 4, 5, 6, 21, 31 happened right around, Davey Johnson was hired a couple of weeks later. So like all of this happened and Davey was in the middle of all of this. And Davey's relationship, even with Cal Sr. and Davey's relationship to the Mets and having won a championship and Gooden and Strawberry and Knight and all of that went on with the Mets, Carter, that he's famous for that. But man, what a huge part of Oriole baseball, and even of your childhood, to say it was never the same around here after John Miller left, and it was never same around here after Davey Johnson left. And Cal would say that Davey had accountability. I mean, Al and I talked about like Davey could have ended Cal's streak because the streak was like over. He'd already passed Gehrig, and Davey was a hard ass and a smart ass and a smart guy and all that. Was reverent to Cal, but not so reverent that he wasn't in control of the lineup. And it's no accident that 1996 and 97, I'm lucky enough that I remember 73 and 79 and 83, good teams. But like for a kid your age, Luke, if there was no Buck and there was no Delmon Young, the only thing there really was Davey Johnson in those 2 years in the history of Camden Yards. And Davey's passing is just, a sort of a monumental thing if you were around and know that John Miller was important as a broadcaster and know what happened when they didn't hire Davey Johnson, when they did, and then when the goof that owned this team and destroyed it for 30 years went to war with his manager.
Yeah, I mean, Davey Johnson, generally speaking, I mean, a giant in the sense that had a pretty good, really nice career as a player, won a World Series in New York, certainly was a personality that could rub people the wrong way, as multiple stops showed that, but he won. And it's funny, I think about the juxtaposition, the timing of that, coinciding with the anniversary of the streak. And of course, as you mentioned, Davey wasn't hired until right after that season. But I almost seem to recall, and you might have a better memory of this because I'm just remembering this as a 13, 12 going on 13 year old kid. I almost remember when the Orioles hired Davey, I seem to remember in passing, he made a comment about, oh, I'll probably be the one that ends Cal's streak or something like that, which, whether he said it in jest or whether it was, hey, this guy's 36 years old and
I think Davey was like, I can be the bad guy. I have no problem wearing a black hat.
So that happened. He, if you recall, famously or infamously, considering he got picked off right after it happened, pinch ran Cal for Manny Alexander in a close game. Manny Alexander got picked off, and Cal was out of the game for a game that went extra innings. I believe it was against the Yankees, right?
Took a lot of phone calls the next day that day, Lucas. I did.
that was a really big deal. I mean, at that point, I mean, this was Cal. Okay, I get it. He was 35 going on 36, whatever.
Well, and Cal
But
was pissed.
oh,
Cal
I
was,
mean,
I was in the locker room that
his,
Cal was pissed.
I remember, I can't remember if that was an HTS or a
This
Channel
is why
13
Messina
game,
would be a good guest
but
and stuff. Mike Messina, like the
Cal
people that
just,
were around during that era remember all of this vividly.
stared into the abyss for 4 innings or whatever it was that they played without him. And then, of course, that summer there was the temporary moving Cal to third base. And then, of course, after the season, they got Mike Bordick because Manny Alexander wasn't worthy of being a starting shortstop. And then the rest was history. They moved Cal to third. But I thought about all that, but Davey Johnson, great baseball man, very much, I mean, Earl is always credited for being, the guy that used analytics before anyone knew what analytics, before it was called that. But Davey was very, very much cut from the same cloth in that way. Very, I mean, let's not bury the fact that look at the lineups he used against Randy Johnson, Right? I mean, the craziest thing, like benching Palmeiro,
Chris
benching
Hoyles.
Robbie Alomar. I mean, Jerome Walton played first base, who barely played that entire year. He was hurt.
I was at
I
that
mean,
game in Seattle, dude.
but hey, Chris Hoyles owned Randy Johnson, and Jeff Rebele hits a home run, right? I
By
mean,
the way, I found my press pass from that game. I can't find my Cal Ripken 21-31 press
yeah.
patch.
So, but I just, I thought about those things, and it, those examples with Cal. I mean, it speaks to the fact that Davey wanted to run things the way he wanted to run them, and obviously that's something that rubbed Peter the wrong way, and don't need to belabor that too much, but I mean, Davey just. I mean, he had his conviction. There's no doubt about that. And I can't speak as anyone who got to know him or meet him or anything like that, but I certainly admired him as a manager. And as I said to you a few minutes ago, talking about John Miller, I mean, letting Davey Johnson go, and obviously, I mean, everyone felt the same way about that. That was another one of those unforgivable things to do. And until Buck Showalter came along 13 years later, I mean, man, and that's no disrespect to Mike Hargrove or any of the managers they had over that time, because the rosters weren't any good either. But man, that talk about a misstep. I mean, so definitely sad to hear the news about Davey Johnson. But yeah, the timing of that, man, it just brought back memories of '96 and '97, and seeing Surhoff, seeing Brady Anderson, seeing Palmeiro, Eddie Murray, who one of my favorite parts of my Orioles fandom growing up was when Pat Gillick brought or Eddie Murray back to the Orioles at the trade deadline in '96, and Eddie got to hit his 500th in Baltimore. And but yeah, Davey Johnson, there's only been one Orioles team in my lifetime that I had full conviction was going to win the World Series. No doubt in my mind. I remember being a 13-year-old kid. I had a cassette, a Queen cassette tape with "We Are the Champions" on it, and there'd be times I'd go to bed at night, playing that cassette tape, and I liked Queen, whatever, but I'd hear that song, and I would just daydream about that year's team winning the World Series in October, because I was just so convinced that '97 team. I was so convinced. So I was so heartbroken when Tony Fernandez hits it over the out of town scoreboard off Armando Benitez, and
So was the
man.
guy that threw the cup of water in my face at Hooters an hour after that game that night.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So I mean, just but those two teams, those 2 years, as fleeting as it was with Davey Johnson, it's a shame it wasn't a longer marriage. But man, what a great career he had, and certainly someone who was worthy of receiving some flowers from us as we're trying to talk about something more pleasant than what happened to the Ravens on Sunday night.
Everybody's in unk now. I guess if I reached unk status in your life, I think I have, right? I mean, all these years, I got a couple of unk stories for you, because you love Cal and Eddie so much. I'm in Cleveland when Eddie's playing for the Indians. I guess it was '95, and I think it was '95.
Would have been
Yeah,
94 or 95,
it was
yeah.
90. It was '95 because Jacobs Field was open, and I'm out there and I'm in the flats. And this is like when the basements rock and the flats didn't look like it does now. It was more bar dish, more like a Fells Point kind of. There was one side of the flats and the other side of the flats. And I walked through, and it was literally a Monday night. So I think it was a series out there where they were playing Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or something like that. So there was nobody out on the town, but I was out looking for girls because that's what I did when I was 28, 27, whatever. Out drinking beer. I'm in Cleveland. I'm excited to be there. And we went out to a bar. There's nobody out. Walking around, walk through the flats, see a Hooters, stick my nose. It was Monday Night Football. That's what I remember about it because I was out kind of watching Monday Night Football. And we didn't have the Ravens yet. It was '95.
Yeah.
The Ravens did not exist. The Browns did. Okay. So I stick my nose in the Hooters, and there's nobody in the Hooters at all, but there's one booth and sitting in the back. Staring down at French fries and wings and a couple cold beer bottles up on the thing, Eddie and Cal. So like I look in and
Oh,
Eddie and
wow.
Cal are just sitting in there in the Hooters in Cleveland on a Monday night. There's nobody in there, nobody. And watching Monday Night Football, drinking beer, sticky fingers. And you walk by and you're
Cool.
like, Yeah, leave him alone. You know? I'll see Cal at the ballpark tomorrow. So that's my Cal and Eddie fun story for you. Any other part is, I think I've told you this before about Eddie. I just want to tell one Eddie story because Eddie's never come on the show. I'd love to talk to Eddie Murray. If somebody made it happen, great. He's always sort of reclusive or whatever. At this
By the
point in
way,
his life, he might have fun with me at this point.
I loved how demonstrative he was when he was announced on Saturday night. I mean, we all think of Eddie as just, being stoic and, not didn't want to talk to the media, all that, which,
He took
I
a
mean, there
selfie with me at the
it
Miami
was
Super Bowl
fun.
15
It
years
was
ago. I ran
cool.
into him and he was there. But I don't know Eddie, but Eddie was around when I covered the team. Eddie was ambassador this. And here's what I know about Eddie. And this probably was the Flanagan era. So this is probably 04, 5, 6, that sort of era. I'm down at spring training. Was definitely not six. It was four, three, four, five. Early spring training, you know how we would go down and do the shows down there live at 6 in the morning in Fort Lauderdale. There's pictures of all of that stuff, right? Earl Weaver would come by. We were like legitimate back then, like promoting the baseball team, Katie, so you could sell tickets. So I'm down there early. I mean, I'm talking 7 in the morning, and it's when I had a crew broadcasting, so I was sort of like off the air. At that point, I was going to do the afternoon show, whatever it was. But I'm walking around at 7 in the morning and we're doing live radio, but I'm not the host, right? So I'm just sort of supervising, making sure everything works. And Eddie Murray walks out with a stack of like Dominican, Venezuelan looking kids. They're all kids. They're small. They don't have major league bodies. They don't look like they shave. They're all wearing number 84, right? And Eddie's walking to the back fields in Fort Lauderdale, back by the airport that the Angelos just used to come in on because they like things hot down there in Fort Lauderdale. And Eddie's walking out with a fungo bat and a cup of coffee, hitting fungos to a bunch of kids at 7:15 in the morning in February. And it was cold. It was like 58 degrees. It was like sweatshirt weather. And I'm thinking, man, he loves baseball. You know what I mean? Like that was the moment for me. Like I haven't talked to Eddie Murray twice in my life. I talked to Eddie Murray once to take a selfie with him because he was sort of notoriously, if I say I'm a media guy, he's not going to like that. And I think I did interact with him. It was never good, bad, or ugly. It was just sort of like I left Eddie alone because he bit back when he was a player. And I think sitting and talking to him now would be magical, like not to steal that phrase, but like for any of these people who have these stories to tell, my show is a format to tell them. And I am a storyteller who lived it through all of it to be able to tell it. So it's special for me. But the Davey Johnson thing, when he died on Saturday morning, I'm trying to express to my wife like who he is and what he does. So I went to the stats, told him he was on the field when Hank Aaron hit the home run because the Orioles dealt him to Atlanta, right? I said, and then the Mets and just, all of that, the Reds after that, and then the Orioles and Angelos. And I said, no one went to war with Peter Angelos. Like I'm famous for it, right? Like the day he died, people were calling me for quotes, right? Like I didn't want to hate Peter Angelos. Peter Angelos hated everything and everybody, and abused everything he could. And that's 30 years of track record on that. That's just the way it was. I wrote a book about it. But Davey Johnson was caught up in all of that personally and the faxing. Please go read the Peter Principles if you're listening. I worked really hard on it. I wrote it for Adam Jones. I hope he reads it one day. Lots of you have read it. Anytime people read it, they're like, hey, you're not a bad writer. You might know something. AI didn't write it. I wrote it. Trust me. And the Davey Johnson thing, from a team standpoint, they made a mistake not hiring him. Davey said some flippant thing that I read in my own book the other day about I thought they wanted somebody with experience. I guess they didn't. Davey always had a plug for, like a hot plate for everybody, especially after being in New York for 7 years and winning World Series and then not winning World Series and like all that. Like he didn't suffer fools, as Alan McCallum said that. He said Davey didn't suffer fools. And when Davey came in, he played with my cousin. So it never registered to me whether he liked me or didn't like me. He was sort of irascible with everybody, but I think he really liked me, but I didn't know it at the time. He did separate me and Palmeiro at the time Palmeiro chased me with the bat. So he got in the middle of that. So Davey's here the whole time, the Jeffrey Mayer thing, all of that. But I never really realized how much he admired me about Angelos even then. That I would go on the air and be a hard ass on all of them, whether it was Palmeiro, whether it was him, whether it was Pat Gillick, whether it was Cal Ripken. I was Nasty Nestor. It was 1995. I took phone calls. I did it live. I said what I thought. I still do 30 years later. Then it was welcomed by real men, not Chad Steele and these people to throw you out. People that did not have a problem with questions after games because he managed the New York Mets and he worked next to Earl Weaver and he had no problem with accountability, which goes back to Mark Andrews and what sticks in my craw with that. But Davey gets the gig, and this is the way Davey was with me. So this is a funny Davey story. I do my show live at the DoubleTree Hotel in Cypress Creek in Fort Lauderdale, right by 95. It was live. It was an evening Budweiser Sports Forum. It's 1996, 97. The Ravens barely exist. The Orioles are everything. Spring training's a big deal. Robbie Alomar's over here. Surhoff's over there. Jimmy Key, Messina, Elrod, Scott Kamonicki. I'm thinking of Alan Mills. All these people are doing my show. Rick Down, they're all doing my show. And I'm in the lobby and I've been setting it up all day. I've been at the ballpark getting bumpers. Hey, you're my 5:15. I'm taking my girlfriend to dinner tonight. Stop by at 6:30. Hey, you in the lobby? I'll do tomorrow night. You know, so I'm making a list like you and I have done at Super Bowls for 30 years of when people are gonna, but I'm live. So I gotta pee. I got traffic reports with Kim Knight. I'm doing all this stuff. And I was on maybe 4 to 7 then, by then, like live in the afternoon in the hotel lobby for a week. All the equipment was a pain in the ass. It was expensive. It was just a whole deal. I'm young. The girls are pretty. The beer's cold. The strip's over there, the beach. I'm distracted by everything, but I'm trying to do a great show so one day I can employ somebody like you for 20 years and do this thing. And Davey comes down in the elevator and has a beer. And he comes over and I'm doing a live show. And I'm like, Davey, you want to come on? And he's like, nah, I got my own show, man. I'm on BAL. I'm gonna sit and watch you do your show. So Davey would sit 6 feet from me and drink beer and entertain all the girls and all the Frank Perdue's there watching my show. Takes a tough man to make tender chicken. So Frank Perdue did my show. So like all these people were doing a show, and Davey's there drinking a beer, laughing at me, rolling his eyes at what I'm saying. Like, what?
Funny.
I like you watching you do your show, man. You do your show. And he would always poke at me, but he never did my show. And in 2 years, he did have his own show on BAL. You know, he's like, I got my show with whoever it was. It wasn't Joe Angel. Oh, John Miller was there the first year. Then he got thrown out. Did too much, didn't bleed enough. But all the BS that went on during all that, Davey, I never disliked Davey. I never called him names. I'm in his office every night. A lot of times I'd be in the visiting. I'd rather go sit with Sparky Anderson than Davey Johnson at that point in my life, you know? Let Alan go sit with him. You know, I'll do the visiting locker room. I'll get to know Ken Griffey. You know what I mean? So for me in that point in my life, trying to be a reporter and all that, it pissed me off. It rubbed me, you know, funny. But it was just Davey being Davey. So Davey gets into it with Peter on the fax machines and the Washington, but you don't read about it. Peter Principle, it's all up there. How crazy Peter Angelos was! What a demented man he was about all of this, about leadership, about accountability, about the things he said. Very Trumpian, by the way, in the words. But so Davey gets whatever, canned, quit. Depends who you ask. Peter didn't want to pay him. Davey left. Davey wanted to be paid. Davey didn't care. Davey wound up getting Dodger money the next year or whatever. But in 1998, he sat out. That year, you can look at his record. And that year, the All-Star game was in Colorado at Coors Field. And boy, did I piss off the Footlick and Pinckner family that week when I called it Pissy Water Stadium all week when I was Bud sponsored. And Bob Footlick said, son, we can't have you calling our beer Pissy Water. We're going to need to work out a sponsorship. So I got a sponsorship from Coors out of that for years that Rob Long later took. But so 1998, I'm at Coors Field in Denver. I'm with Tom Capp. And I'm out there covering the All-Star game. It's probably my sixth All-Star game at that point. 93, 4 in Pittsburgh, you know, like all the ones that happened, right? Well, 94 didn't happen. No, 94 happened, Pittsburgh. 95 was Texas, 96 was Cleveland, 90, so 96 was Philly, 97 was Cleveland.
Cleveland.
So I'm like six All-Star games in. So I know the routine, I know what I'm doing. I'm in Lodo. It's brand new franchise, brand new stadium, brand new everything. And like celebrities are at, it's a little bit like Cooperstown. Guys signing autographs, doing pictures, fan fest, you know, all of that. And Coors Light had hired Davey to like sign pictures and autographs, take pictures for 2 hours at a bar in Lodo on that Monday. And I don't have Davey's number at that time. I had Johnny Oates' number, but I didn't have Davey's number. And I'm like, I'm going to go see Davey. And Tom always loved Davey. Tom Capp loved Davey Johnson because he was such a irascible fellow. You know, just he liked that give and take. Davey liked the give and take. I showed up at the bar and Davey's there. And Davey sees me. And it was like I was a long lost brother. He bought me two beers. He sat for 45 minutes, told me everything that was effed up about Angelo's, gave me the entire background of everything that went on that I probably should have taken notes, would have made the book better. I probably forgotten half of what he told me that day. It just reaffirmed everything that was screwed up about Angelo's. But he could not have been more pleased to tell me how effed up Peter Angelo's was, then took the Dodger job and whatever. I only saw Davey maybe three more times in my life. And the last time I saw Davey alive was at Dodger Stadium in 2009. I was on the field. It was the night after Bisciotti threatened me to stay away from the Harbaugh family at the Dana Point owners' meetings. The World Baseball Classic, the first one, was happening. Dice K on the back end of Yamamoto was pitching for Japan. Ichiro was playing in that game. Roy Oswalt started the game at Dodger Stadium. Jeremy Guthrie was involved. Brian Roberts was involved. And I had a press credential. And I was on the field at Dodger Stadium for the World Baseball Classic because I was there for the owners' meetings. And I went on the field and Davey was there. And I said to my wife, I'm like, I don't know. You know, Davey would always refuse to come on with me. I wonder if he'll come on with me. And I went over with him and I said, Davey, my wife, Jen, oh, look at you. You got a pretty wife. You know, like this, Davey hadn't seen me in years. You know, he had been running the Nationals or was about to run the Nationals at that time. He's out of baseball. And because I asked him, like, if he thought about coming back. And he's like, well, my kids were born in Baltimore. He gave me all that. But I have a video of he and I on YouTube at the end, you know, of my media, baseball media career at Dodger Stadium on the field. He's about to manage the World Baseball Classic. I was talking about a memorable baseball game, dude. 50,000 Japanese people in there, bangers, yelling for Ichiro, eating noodles in Dodger Stadium. I mean, it was on. It was a great experience to be there that night. But I guess what I remember was Davey Johnson talking to me that night, like on the record, and I got to talk to him a little bit about Baltimore, and he was incredibly magnanimous with me. So, like, play with my
That's cool.
cousin. He's a special guy. I tried to tell my wife all this stuff on Saturday morning. Didn't mean much to her. I'm like, I'm going to invite Alan on, and we're going to tell Davey Johnson stories because I got to tell Davey because he's just such an important part of the history of Baltimore and Baltimore sports, and even shaping me in some way to be able to deal with an accountable, honest, you know, front-facing leader, successful at everything he did, and having that part of my life taken away from me as a journalist, it's a disgrace. John Harbaugh is a disgrace for not wanting to take questions from me after Davey Johnson did 30 years ago and never had a problem with it. And in the modern era, for anybody listening, none of these real men of that era had any problem with accountability, with criticism, with answering legitimate criticism, with explaining to fans how things worked, with wanting to teach their craft, even if they had a chip on their shoulder. And Davey had three of them, you know. But I love Davey. So, you know, and I just wanted to say that because I don't think I've said a word. I don't think you and I have ever discussed Davey Johnson in 20 years, have we?
Probably not. I mean, maybe sometime in passing if the Orioles were playing the Nationals when he was managing there, but I mean, probably not. And
Yeah,
like
and
I
he was a
said,
huge part of Oriole baseball, man. Rings,
as a
all of it.
player, as a manager, manager of the year, all-star, I mean, he had a one heck of a baseball life. There's no question about that, and certainly should and will be remembered.
Hall of Fame. He is Luke Jones. You know, if I were a Hall of Fame voter, I could make a case for Davey Johnson being. You can't tell the history of baseball without telling Davey Johnson, because they're. The 86 Mets were special, you know, in that way. And
Sure.
I think that remains. So honor to Davey Johnson, honor to Cal Ripken, honor to Eddie Murray, honor to John Miller. Wait, have we missed anybody? I mean,
I'm trying to
Yamamoto
think.
even for his greatness. Oh, Jackson Holliday for breaking the damn no-hitter up. How about that?
Emmanuel Rivera with the walk-off two-run single, right? I mean, it was a great night. It really was. I'm glad I went. I'm glad that there was something tangible with the current baseball team that fans could take away to feel good about. It was a fun night. There haven't been nearly enough fun nights at the ballpark this year, but Saturday night certainly. And Friday night, Basayo with the walk-off. We didn't even mention that, so I'll get that in there as well. That was good to see.
All right, look at your watch, and you tell me the next time we're going to talk Oriole baseball now that the Ravens have pissed away a game to the Buffalo Bills in the last seconds.
We'll do something over the next week, but it kind of becomes like a weekly thing rather than a
I'm
every
going to
series or
continue to
anything.
whisper the only two words that matter, and they're not David Rubenstein. You ready? Michael Arrighetti. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. I still love talking about baseball, even if they hate me.